Boker Tov, and today's daf in the Sechet Shavuot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKedesh, is daf Mem Gimel. However, I don't know, these people are running to stores and trying to get fruit for Shabbos and so on, a waste of time. Get back to your desk, Mr. Gavi. Always during the daf, back to your desk. So we're holding now at the Halakha Mishnah on Amud Beis, where we decided we'll stop because it's basically starting a whole new sugya. And this is the Mishnah of the Elu Devarim. So until now, we spoke about who can actually bring a suit that could be Gerem HaShvuah. And we talked about Hegdesh, we talked about Kotan, and we talked about the various possibilities, how to understand that. Whether it means the Tana of a Katan, or it means to avoid Kanunya of a Katan. This Mishnah wants to discuss what the objects are that one can make a Shvuah on. Now, we've already seen a lot of the discussion upon which this Mishnah is based, because we had discussions earlier on, Binogeya the Machlokas, Rabbi Elazar and the Rabbanan, about whether we darshan klal prado klal, or ribui miyut ribui. And it turns out that actually this Mishnah is based on three different klal prado klals that all have to do with the sugya of shvuas. So ve'elo devarim she'en nishba'in aleihem. These are the following issues. We do not make a shvuah on ha'avadim ve'hashtarot ve'hakarkaot ve'hegdeshot. So as far as hegdesh is concerned, all of the psukim that we're going to be analyzing in the course of the discussion in the Gemara, all of the psukim, you'll recall, speak about an ish el re'ehu. And an ish el re'ehu does not include hegdesh, because hegdesh is not your friend, and it's not on the same level as you, and therefore it excludes hegdesh from all of the sugyas in which re'ehu is mentioned. We've seen this before when it comes to dinim of nezikin as well. Here we're talking about the dinim of shvuas. So, as you know, the other cases, avadim, shtarais, karkaot, those are all excluded because of whatever klal prat we have always is the sum total of the content of the things that are ke'en haprat. Remember, klal prat or klal, the only things that are included are only ke'en haprat. Iyata dan ele ke'en haprat. So whether the case is ki yitain ish el re'ehu kesev o kelim lishmor, which was the beginning, of course, of the sugya about the shvuat ha-shomerim, but it was also the beginning of the sugya of the ki huzeh, which was the iruv parshiot. And so we'll just go through one of them to remind you. So when we talk about kesev o kelim, so first we have the general, ki yitain ish el re'ehu, whatever, that's a klal. Kesev okelim, that's a prat. Lishmar, going back to yitene reyeu lishmar, that's a klal. Klal prat or klal, iata danela kena prat. What is the common denominator of these particular cases? They are all something that is movable and something that is intrinsically valuable, which means it cannot be a shtar, which has no intrinsic value. It's not worth anything. It's just a piece of paper. It's only the information in it. Information is not called intrinsic value. This is just a vector for the information. So it cannot include a shtar, and it cannot include something that is not mitaltel, which means that by definition, real estate or anything that the Torah compares to real estate, which is, of course, the classic, v'itnachaltem otam livnechem achrechem, Le'achuzat Olam is a reference to the Avadim. And therefore, Avadim, Karkaot, and Shtarot are going to be excluded from all of the different klal prado klals. This is just the opening salvo that we have over here about Kesev o Kelim, but we're going to be talking about a lot of others. Because the Mishnah also points out that we have the same idea when it comes to Tashlumei Kefil. So when it comes to Tashlumei Kefil, it also says, al kol dvar pesha, al shor, al chamor, al se, al salma, al kol avida. It's exactly going to end up with the same klal, prado klal. All of the things that are mentioned are gufa mamon, and they're metaltal. So therefore, there's no Tashlumei Kefil, because that was the opening of the story of an attack by a shor on something that is yours. And because there's no tashlumei kefo, by definition, there cannot be tashlumei arba avachamisha. Because, after all, remember the Gabi rule, that the Torah said tashlumei arba avachamisha, velo tashlumei shlosha ve'arba'a. So if you cancel the kefel, you're left with three or four, not four or five. And therefore, since the Torah never told us a din of three or four, there's no tashlumim. A shomer chinam, who would normally have had to swear if he claims that something happened and that things were stolen from him or it was lost, there also, what does it say? It says exactly the same opening. Ki teni shereyu kesev okelim lishmar. Okay. Eno se sachar, shomer sachar, who would still have to swear on Torin Tainas. He obviously is going to be chayev on Gneva Vaveda, but he still can be doing Taina on a Ones, and the type of attack that he wasn't expected to fight off, which is called Ones, so that would be even an armed robbery. So over there, it says again, Ki teni shereyeu chamor, o shor, o se, v'chol behima, same exact klal prado klal. All of those things are examples of movables that are intrinsically worth money. So therefore, all of those cases would be excluded from the dinim of Shvuah or the particular dinim of Tashlumi. Rabbi Shimon Omer, now you said, says Rabbi Shimon, that you do not pay for any hegdash, but I don't agree with that. It depends what kind of hegdash. If it's kodashim, that you are chayav bachrayutan, what would that mean? You went ahead and you said, I'll lie. So once you say Hare Alai, you are whatever it is, Hare Alai Ola. So, okay, so then in that case, you are mechuyev to replace that Ola if anything happens to it. That means that that Hegdash is now called, in another very important Gavi term, Dover Hagorem Lemamon Kimamon Dami. So if you hold that something that is the equivalent of cash, to you it's the equivalent of cash. If anything happens to this animal, you're going to have to replace it. That means that for all intents and purposes, that animal is the value which it represents for you. Why would you not be chayev just like anything that is cash? And it's your cash, not Kegdish's cash. It's you are going to have to replace it. So albeit from the word re'ehu, we're not going to talk about Hegdash's debt, but we are going to talk about the money that you lost. You're not Hegdash, you're Re'ehu. And therefore, Kachip Shechayav Bachrayutan Nishba'in Aleyan, and only where you said Harezo Ola. Okay, I should say Harezo, obviously, because it's a male, that Harezo Ola. So if that's the case, there you would be Eno Chayav Bachrayutan, and therefore you don't have the issue of Dover Hagar Lamamon, and because of that, now, the question is, how far do we extend this concept of karka? So we saw karka means not only karka, it means all things compared to karka, such as avadim. Let's think about something else. How about things that are growing on the land? Is that considered to be karka? Because it's bechuber to the karka. So Rabbi Meir Omer, yesh dvarim shehim bakarka, there's two girsaot here, the gir all over, where Rabbi Meir is quoted, it always says, Yesh dvarim shehem ke karka, not ba karka. Over here, the Lashon is ba karka, but it doesn't matter. The idea is the same. There are things that are in the land, are similar to the land, are growing on the land, and nonetheless, they do not have the din of the land. Ve'en chachamim odim lo, the chachamim disagree with him. Let's give you an example. Ketzad, a guy comes along with a ta'ana. Eser gefanim te'unot masarti lecha. I gave you 10 fully laden grapevines with beautiful grapes on them, and now you were supposed to take care of them, and you have to give them back to me. And the other guy says, what are you talking about? You gave me 5, not 10. So now that is obviously a motive in Mikzas, and Rabbi Meir says, despite the fact that it's connected to the ground, it still is not the ground, and therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, is Mechayev Shvu'ah, even though it's Bechubet to the Karka. Whereas the Chachamim say, Kol HaMechubar LeKarka, Arehu KeKarka. And we're going to see in the Gemara that the Machlokas over here is about a sugya that we just spoke about in Mikvaot, which is the question of whether something that is omed lachtoch kechatuch dami. Remember when it came to the din of the handles of kelim? Here we have an equivalent issue, which is kol haomed li batzer kibitzurim dami. Something that is about to be harvested. And we're talking about grapes that are ready for harvest. And therefore, they're arguing about something which, although it's mechubar lekarka, is ready to be cut off of the karka. So Rabbi Meir holds, well, therefore they're considered to be like metatolin, and they fit our klal pradu klal. Whereas according to the Chachamim, even if it's omed libatzer, we do not consider it to be bitzurim dami, which is how we paskin, actually. So in this case, the Chachamim say, look, it's still mechubar lekarka, despite the fact that it's going to be cut down and is ready to be cut down. Areo kekarka. Furthermore, next issue: einish ba'in el al davar shebamida v'shebamishkal v'shebaminyan. What we've been talking about in terms of moda b'miktsas has to be measurable. It can't be approximate. So if we're going to be talking about a moda b'miktsas, it's got to be, this is the proportion of the precise amount that you said to me. Let me give you an example. A guy says to someone, you know what? This barn was completely full of hay. Or this package was stuffed full of cash. The other guy says, look, I don't know. I didn't open the door to your barn. I didn't open up the box of your money. Take what you gave me. Mashi hinachta tanotel. I don't know. That is not called moda b'miktsas, because there was no precise amount that was claimed, and there's no precise amount of a hoda'ah. The guy's simply saying, here's what you gave me. I have no idea. You're not telling me a precise amount. Well, I knew all along. Thank you very much. I knew it was filled to this exact. That's not considered to be a tvi'ah. But in a case where, let's say, you've got a room that has markings on the side for how high the hay is. So one guy says it's ad haziz. It's right up here to where we have this shelf sticking out of the wall. And the other guy says, no, the hay was piled up to only up to the windowsill. And so, okay, that is something that is measurable. And there he would be chayav. Okay, we're going to have to get into the details about the exactly what we mean by measurable, but we'll do that in the Gemara. So now let's go through each one of these, which I've already clued you in to the klal pradu klal that we've spoken about. So tashlumi kefil minola, the Tana Rabbana, al kol dvar pesha, that's your opening klal, al shor al chamor, al ser, al salma, those are all the pratim, and then it says at the end, that's the pratim, al kol aveda, chazar v'kalal klal pratu klal, I atadan ela ke'en haprat. This is a classic klal pradu klal that we have over here. And it's the opening of the dinim of Shvua. And therefore, yatadan ela ke'en haprat, ma'prat mefurish dover mitaltel, vegufo mamon. It has to be intrinsically, has value, can't be a shtar, which is just information. Av kol davar mitaltel, vegufo mamon. Yatsu karkaot, obviously, that's the ultimate. They're not metaltonim by definition. Yatsu avadim, shukshu lekarkaot. Yatsu shtarot, they may be very movable, but they do not have intrinsic value. And ein guf and momon, and as far as canceling any claims by hegdesh, that's because it says el rei ehu. So wherever we have that ish, it's always coupled to el rei ehu. And that rei ehu means like you. And hegdesh is not like you. It's a completely different type of rishos. Lo tashlumi kefil v'lo arba ava chamisha. Why? Well, because since we've excluded the tashlumi kefil in all of these cases of Geneva, then by definition, we are also excluding all of the arba ava chamisha. Why? Because since the Torah only stipulated payments of four or five, depending if we're talking about ser or shor, so therefore, there's no way to be mechayev you tashlum eshloshav arba'a. Once we canceled the first part of the story, called Dvar Pesha, which was tashlum kefil, So then that's the end of Tashlumei Arba V'Chamisha as well. And as far as Shvuah is concerned, until now we're talking about the Tashlumei. What about as far as the Shvuah is concerned? So the Shomer Chinam Eino Nishba, how do we know that? Minani Mili. The Tana Rabbana. Here we have the same type of klal, prat, or klal. It says, ki yitein ish oreheu. Now we're talking about lishmor. Until now we were talking about someone who steals. And we open up that story with a case in which somebody is creating a din of a shmira. It turns out this particular shmira that we're talking about over here is the shmira of a shomer china. And it starts off with ki yitein ish oreheu, whatever it is. That's a klal, which ends with lishmor, of course, which is the second klal. And then in the middle, it puts a list of pratim. And the list of pratim are kesev o kelim. That's the prat. So then we've got the lishmor, chazar v'kalal. Please mute yourselves. Klal prat u klal, yata danei doke ina prat, ma prat beforesh dover ametalta v'gufo momon, afkol dover ametalta v'gufo momon, excluding karkaot, which are not metaltalim, excluding avadim, yatsu avadim shuk shula karkaot, and yatsu shtarot, because even though they're nice and metaltel, ain't gufo momon. And as far as our exclusion of Hegdash is concerned, it says, here, ki ten ish el rei ehu. So it opens with the same way, and therefore, wherever we've got that word, whether it's in terms of damages, in terms of the shvues, it's the damage, the sense of stealing, all of that is first introduced with the rei ehu, which excludes Hegdash, and furthermore, it's introduced with the list of the type of things that are the pratim. Then you say, and if he's a shomer sochar, and osi sochar, he doesn't pay for those things, even if they were, in fact, geneva v'aveda. How do we know that? I thought he's chayev on geneva v'aveda. Ah, the Tana Rabbanan. Ki yitein ish hareyehu klal, chamor, oshor, ose, prat. There you've got your list of pratim. And, of course, the end of the statement is, if we would have left out the protein, it simply would have said, ki ten ish oreihu lishmor, or kol behema lishmor. So when it says, chamor o shor oseh, that's a list of pratim. When it concludes with the words, v'chol behema lishmor, that's a klal. So we've got, once again, a klal prat u klal introducing the chiyuvim of a shomer sachar, and it's the same as we said before. That excludes anything that is not mitaltel and is not gufo mamon, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We use the word up to the closing of Hekdash. As far as Hekdash is concerned, here too, it says re'ehu. So it's exactly the same idea that we had by Kefal, and that we had by Shomer Chinam, and that we have here by Shomer Sachar, all the same. Rabbi Meir Omer. Now, the next piece of the Mishnah says that according to Rabbi Meir, there are things that might be mechuber to the karka. Now here, the lashon that it brings is not the lashon we have in the Mishnah, which is yesh dvarim shein ba karka, but the standard way that we refer to Rabbi Meir, yesh dvarim shein ki karka, but nonetheless they're not given the din of karka. Even though physically they're like karka, they're not treated like karka. So the case that we gave was that the guy says, listen, I gave you these 10 beautiful, full of grapevines, and now you're giving me back less. Where are my 10? And the guy says, no, it was only 5. So Rabbi Meir said, well, since, in the end, we're going to know how the Gemara is going to come out, that we're talking about Dover Amid Livatzer, but we don't know that yet. So what's the machlokas exactly? It appears that Mechlad Rabbi Meir Savar. So according to Rabbi Meir, anything attached to the ground, because the Gemara thinks now that it's the vines themselves, not the grapes that were Omid Livatzer, but the vines themselves that are not considered to be like karka. Well, that would mean that according to Rabbi Meir, the fact that something is attached to the ground doesn't give it a din of the ground. But that doesn't make sense. Because if that's what the machlokas is, why are we talking about these beautiful grape-filled grapevines? What do grape-filled have to do with the price of eggs in China? Why don't we talk about the vines themselves, right? Liflige Bisrukot. Talk about the vines without anything on them. You want to just illustrate a case where something is attached to the ground and it doesn't have a din of being in the ground. So that can't be the machlokas. So therefore, it must be Omer B'Yosi Rebbe Hanina. This is not the case. Of course, Rebbe Meir doesn't hold that anything connected to the ground is not part of the ground. They're talking about an avim omdoti batzerka miflage. So we've got these grapes. They're fully ripe, ready to be harvested. Rebbe Meir holds that if they're ready to be harvested, they are kivitzurotami. Whereas Rabbanan say, even if they're ready to be harvested, the bottom line is they're connected to the ground, and therefore they're putter from any type of shvua. Next case in the Mishnah. You can only swear if it is something that has a clear-cut definition of a davar shebemida, shebemishkal, shebeminyan, as opposed to saying, I gave you a box full of cash. A box full of cash is not a davar shebemida, shebemishkal, shebeminyan. Omer Abaye, loshana domele bayit stam. Now, this is only if the guy said, I gave you a house full of wheat. I gave you a box full of money. But if you actually point to the house and you say, it's this house that was full, or the box, it's this box that was full. So then if that's the case, and the guy says, no, it wasn't full, it was half full. So then that is a definition, isn't it? I mean, we can measure it now. We can know exactly how much it is. So it should be no different than the case of up to the windowsill or up to the shelf, right? Omar Le Rav, excuse me, Abaye. So then, if that's the case, why would the Mishnah contrast the case of the house with a case of where he said up till the shelf or up till the window? You didn't have to contrast it with something in the house. You could simply have said, "Bameh devarim amurim." Take the same case, "Bameh devarim amurim," where the guy said the full house, right? But if he said this full house, by itzeh, this full house. So then he would be chayev, according to you. That's all you needed to say. Instead, you change the whole case and you make it dependent on whether it was a house that had a precise definition of a place where it was filled to. The Mishnah would have said it my way. So obviously, the whole idea of your saying a house or a box, even if you point to it, is not a Dover Shebemida for Shebemishkav Shebeminyan. Why? Because essentially, when people make a reference to something like that, it's not a precise reference. When you say, oh, the house was full, what does that mean? It was full up to the last inch, the last centimeter, the last foot. Maybe it was like a meter away from the ceiling. I mean, you wouldn't use the word, oh, gosh, it was a full house. Of course you'd say it was a full house. And you're talking about a box full of cash. I mean, how was the money spread? You mean it was filled all the way up till the taping down at the top of the box? I mean, was there a half centimeter? But that's not giving me an amount anyway. So therefore, the reason that the Mishnah avoided your case of Baye, in which the poor guy points to the house or he points to the box, is because even that is not considered to be a Dover Shebemishkal v'Shebeminyan. Elam Arava. This does not count. Liolam Eno Chayav. It's got to be a real Dover Shebemida, v'Shebemishkal v'Shebeminyan, that's what the claim is, and the guy has to define what he's admitting to. V'Yodelo precisely, v'Dover Shebemida, v'Shebemishkal v'Shebeminyan, and I disagree with Abaya's point, and in fact, Tanika Vasida Rava seems pretty clear. From the Braita, that Rava is right on target over here. Because it says in the Braita like this, Kor tvu'a li biyadechos. I have a whole kor of your, I gave you a whole kor of my wheat, let's say, right? That's 30 sot. The other guy says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have anything of yours. Zalomer ein lecha biyadi. So there, of course, he's putter, because that's a kofar bakol. We're discussing now in terms of Shvuah D'Oraisa. We're not talking about Reb Nachman and the Shvuah's Hesed. Obviously, he said before, all of these cases require Shvuah's Hesed, but we don't mention that in every case. You put that in on your own cognizance, right? So when it says putter, it means putter from the Shvuah D'Oraisa. Now, let's take another case. A guy says, I gave you this big lamp menorah gedolah. And I asked you to hold it for me, you know? And the guy says, it wasn't a big lamp. It was a small table lamp. Ein lecha biyadi ela menorah ketanah. Well, there you're potter for another reason. And that is, just because both of them are called lamps, that doesn't mean that they're both the same thing. I mean, there's a big difference between a table lamp and a standing lamp. That's not, well, they're both lamps, so that's like motive and mixas. No, it's not. You're talking past each other. You're talking about a box of screws, and the other guy is talking about a box of apples. I mean, that's not a modem and mixas. A different menorah is a completely different type of thing. Therefore, you're potter because of the classic masha ta'ano lo hodelo, umasha hodelo lo ta'ano, and you're talking past each other, and that doesn't count. How about if a guy says, well, I gave you my big belt, you know? Big belt. I've only got a small belt, you know, so maybe you gave me a size 50 belt and all I've got is a size 28, you know. That's a different thing. It's not like that you can have the belt whittled down up to your belt and up to their belt, even though it's all belt, but it's a different belt, and therefore it's putter. But suppose he says to him, kor tvu'a yesh li biyadcha. But so I have a full kor of wheat I gave you, let's say. And the other guy says, it wasn't a full kor, it was a half a kor. It was just a letech. So then that is classic, and you're chayev. Now, how about if a guy says, minorat bat eser litrin yesh li biyadcha? I've got this candlestick here. It's easier to understand it, not as a lamp. Here I've got a candlestick, and man, this has got a lot of silver in it. It weighs 10 kilo. And the other guy says, no, I've got something that you gave me, but it only weighs 5 kilo. Then he is chayev. Kolor shel davar la'olamenu chayev, ad shiyataneinu bedover shebimidah, v'shebimishkal v'shebiminyan, v'yodelo bedover shebimidah, v'shebimishkal v'shebiminyan. Now I say that this is a raya to Rava. How is it a raya to Rav? It just says the same thing that the Mishnah says. Not true. Because this braita is obviously coming to add something by throwing in the words, klolo shel davar. I mean, you said every single case. What exactly are you adding by saying klolo shel davar? It must be you're coming to add precisely Rav's point. Lav la tuye bayit ze male? That's what it's there to tell me. Don't think that a bias case is considered to be a dover shabamidav shemishkal shabaminya. No, the klal is SBA. Serious. Dover shabamidav shemishkal shabaminya. Okay, very nice. By the way, what's the difference between a large menorah versus a small menorah and a 10 kilo menorah versus a 5 kilo menorah? When you said a large menorah and the guy said, no, it's a small menorah, there he doesn't have to pay. But if you say it's a 10-kilo menorah and he says a 5-kilo menorah, then you do have to pay. How does that fit? I mean, is it not true that in the case of a menorah gedola, menorah ketana, mashetano lo hodalo, they're talking past each other, and you're talking about one thing, a table lamp, and the other guy's talking about a floor lamp, mashodalo lo tano. But if that's the case, isn't it true about talking about a lamp that weighs 10 kilo and a lamp that weighs 5 kilo, right? Isn't it the same thing? I mean, one is small, one is big. So, Mad Shatan.
Maybe doesn't it mean how many liters of olive oil it holds? Isn't that how you would refer to it?
No, absolutely not, as you will soon see. Patience, Rebarnea, always patience. And you don't have to run down to an air raid shelter just for the drama of it. Patience. Wait until they shoot at you before you get all heated up, you know?
Rebbe is a nair unto our feet.
Yes, sir. Okay, anyway, so isn't it the same thing? Ma shetano lo hodalo, uma shehodalo lo tano. So why does he take a shvua? Omer Reb Shmuel bar Reb Yitzchak. Well, we're talking about a menorah shel chuliot. A menorah shel chuliot means that you make it whatever size you want. You know, so you put in, let's say it's got 5 sections. You can add sections to make it higher. It's the same menorah. So now the question is, how many chuliot are you there? So, the Komodo Lemina, he's talking about the same exact type of thing. It's only a question of how many chuliot were included. Wait a second. If that's the case, how come it only speaks about the menorah? Why doesn't it talk about the belts? Now, the belts, nowadays, they don't sell these kind of belts. Okay, I remember when I was a kid, these are exactly the kind of belts that we used to make in camp. I'm sure you must have all made them, where you add additional pieces of leather to whatever size you want the belt to be. Remember those little pieces of leather? You stick it through a hole in the other piece, pull it out. It's got a hole at the end. You put another piece in. So you make the belt as long as you want it or as short as you want it. So if you're talking about a menorah shel chuliot, you could talk about a belt, essentially, shel chuliot. And it'd say that the case is talking about bidalaife. We have these pieces that you click together. And then you would be arguing about how many pieces of leather are in the belt. In the same way that you're arguing over here about the chuliot. So the reason is because we're not talking about cases, strange cases. I mean, it's not a standard belt as a belt. If you want to talk about shel chuliot or laife, you'd have to say so. The same thing is true about a menorah. I mean, how many people use menorah that you make different sections of and so on? A standard menorah is a menorah. If you meant shel chuliot, you should have said so. So therefore, we've got to have a different explanation that would apply only to menorot and not to belts. Okay, so what would that be? How could we distinguish between a larger menorah and a small menorah versus a heavy menorah and a lighter menorah? Doesn't it boil down to the same thing? No. It's because, Elam, Rababa Bar Mamo, a menorah is different. It looks exactly the same from the outside. The question is, how hollow is it? And you might be looking at the same exact size menorah. One of them is a $10,000 menorah, and the other one's a $100 menorah. So the question is, one is solid gold, and the other one is like a little thin gold plate, and there's nothing in it. So because of that, it's the same type of thing. It's a menorah gedola, but you could actually, if it were a $10,000 menorah, you could always have actually ground it down, scrape off the outside of the gold, and now it'll be left with only 5 litrin. So that you can always do. And therefore, it is the same type of thing, and it's not considered to be Hoidelo Misha'eno Mino. So that is a moment for our suddenly wide awake. As soon as the going gets rough, let me tell you something, our captain gets tough. And we're now...
Please drink.
Yes, sir.
Talking to him.
Now, suppose we've got this curious case where it's not clear who owes who. The lender owes the borrower, or the borrower owes the lender. How is that? Well, let's imagine a case where somebody lent someone money, but it was based on his watch. It was ala mashkon. And now the mashkon, what happens when you take a mashkon from someone? You are considered to be a shomer. You lent him money based on that mashkon. He gives you his watch. Well, you're a shomer and not a shomer chinam. You're not doing him any favors. You're a shomer sachar because you want that watch to be able to collect in the event that he doesn't pay, right? Now, if you, therefore, lose the watch, you're not a shomer chinam is going to be potter on aveda. You lose the watch, you're going to have to pay him back the value of the watch. So in a case where the watch was lost, so here the lender says to the lover, look, I lent you a sela based on this. A sela is 2 shekel. 2 shekel are for dinner. And I know I lost your watch, so I'm going to take off the shekel that your watch was worth, and now you only owe me a shekel, right? So just pay off the shekel, and we're even, Steven. A shekel, says the other guy. My beautiful watch? A shekel? Absolutely not. You lent me a sela, and my watch was worth that entire sela. I don't owe you a dime unless you give me back my watch. The din over there is a Chapata. Why, he's a classic Koferbakov. Now, how about if he doesn't say it was worth the full amount of the loan, but rather, over here the lender says, well, I lent you a cella, 2 shekels worth, and your watch was worth 1 shekel, so pay me the shekel and we're fair and square. Rivalovets says, what are you talking about? My watch was only worth 1 shekel? My watch was worth 3 dinar, which is 1.5 shekels. So I owe you only 1 dinar. I don't owe you 1 shekel. Ah, now this is, of course, a mode of b'miktas. And if it's a mode of b'miktas, he's chayiv to take the normal shvua of a mode of b'miktas. Now, the thing is that in such a case, we're going to see that we don't allow this person to just get away with claiming that the watch was lost. Why? Because we're afraid that maybe he wanted that watch. It's not that he's a ganav. He's going to be willing to take the hit for how much the watch was worth, because he always wanted a watch like that. Okay, so because of that, he's also going to have to be nishba that he doesn't have the watch. You will recall that in cases of shomrim, that was one of the things that the shomer has to be nishba on. Besides the other issues, you know, of shelo shalach yado memlechet re'eyo, things like that. Okay, so in this case, even though it says that he's going to have to swear that the amount that he's claiming the watch was worth, it doesn't mean he's the only one that's going to have to swear, because the lender is also going to have to swear in this case. Now, how about in reverse cases? In the reverse cases is that now the borrower is claiming that the watch was worth more than the loan, and now the lender owes him money. So these are the next cases in the Mishnah. I'm pointing this out because when we're going to refer in the Gemara to the Reisha of the Mishnah, or the Seifa of the Mishnah, the Reisha includes all the cases where the issue is, does the borrower still owe money to the lender? And the Seifa of the Mishnah are the cases where the issue is, does the lender owe money to the borrower for above and beyond the loan, for the fact that he lost the mashkan. So now we're going to start the Seifa cases. Sela hilvitani alav. So now the other guy who took the loan, he says, look, you lent me a sela based on my mashkan. And it was my watch was worth actually 2 sla'im. And you owe me a sela. I don't owe you a penny. And the lender says, no, wasn't that good of a watch. I don't owe you anything. It was worth exactly what I lent you. Sela helviticholov, sela hayashaveh. In that case, he's potter from the shvuas hatera, because he's a kofer bakol. But how about if he says, well, you're right, it was worth more, but not that much more. Selayel vitani alav. The guy says to him, you lent me a sell and it was worth 2. And now the lender says, Malva says, lo, I agree it was worth more, but not that much more. I did lend you a sella on it, and it wasn't worth 2 sla'im, but it was worth 5 dinarim. That I admit to. So I owe you a little bit more, namely an additional dinar. Okay. So I lent you 4 dinar, it was worth 5 dinar, I'll pay you that extra dinar. Now that is, of course, a mode of b'miktas. This guy's claiming 2 dinar, a full shekel, and this other guy is claiming 1 dinar. And that's all that I owe you, and therefore he's chayav, the standard mode of b'miktas. Of course, we've got the other problem. Namely, how do we know he didn't just want the watch and he's ready to pay for it? Ah, that's not going to be putter just because he makes a shvua of mudah b'miktas. So we've got the additional shvua derabanan that the lender is going to have to make, who is now not just the lender, but he's the shomer socher. He's going to have to make a shvua as well that he does not have this watch in his possession. Now the question is, who swears? Now, that's a very strange question. Who swears? Can we just talk about who swears? Now, it's going to turn out, when we look into the Gemara, it's going to talk about not who swears, because both of them need to swear. If the other person is in a position that he's got to take the shvua that he doesn't have, that means the lender is always going to be the other person. He's going to have to swear that he, as a shomer secha, does not have this watch in his house, or in his possession, right? Then the question is there another shvua? Does he have to take the other shvua himself? Is the other guy going to take the shvua? In the end, the Gemara is going to take, understand that what the Mishnah is really asking is, who swears first? So in these cases where both of them have to swear, the borrower has to swear that he doesn't owe more money, and the lender has to swear that it's not in his possession. Who swears first? That's going to be the question. So, mi nishba, always the lender, because he's the one that is last known to have been holding the watch, right? And therefore, mi shipa pikadon etzlo is always going to have to be the first one to swear. Why? Because let's say he makes the borrower swear that the watch was worth X. He may be holding the watch, and then he'll take out the watch and say, ha, I knew you were going to do that. Now let everybody see what kind of bum you are. Here is the watch. Let them see what it was really worth. And you will see this guy is a liar and should never be believed again with a shvua. Great. So because in order to avoid that, exactly what the Indian over there is to avoid, some of the Rishonim mentioned it's a chilul Hashem, that this person was put into a position and made a shvua sheker. Others say that it doesn't make sense to put anybody ever into a position where he can become nifsal, where he might do such a thing. But you understand that obviously it is going to be better that we don't end up in this type of compromising situation. And the sensitivity to that compromise among the different Rishonim and understanding is a very important thing to take into consideration. It's one thing to, you know, be right. It's the other thing to expose another person as being wrong. Well, nowadays people don't think about that. But the Mishnah does think about it. And therefore, we don't put people into compromising situations where they can look bad. That, according to some Rishonim, it's not the getter of the Chilul Hashem, which, by the way, usually is also a function in these kind of cases where all of our very wonderful kanoim are going around and making sure that everybody knows that he's not believed in a shvua. Look at this person. God help us. Okay, so this is now the final Mishnah that we have in our parak, and let us take a look at the Gemara. Says the Gemara, well, what was that last case? What were we talking about? Hey, what was that thing about taking out the pikadon? What were we referring to? I mean, it can't be referring to the close of the Mishnah, because the close of the Mishnah, actually, the one who is supposed to be swearing is the lender, not the borrower. I mean, it's just the fact, well, obviously, who swears? The guy who has to swear, which is, in this case, the Malva, because he was the one that is trying to get out of the claim that the watch is worth more money than the loan, and he owes the guy more money than he admits to owing him, right? So what does it have to do with taking out the watch? He's the one that has to make the swearing. Obviously, therefore, so Shmuel, of course, we're talking about the Reisha. In the Reisha of the Mishnah, it's the borrower who has to swear that the watch was worth more than the lender claims, and that therefore he should subtract more money from the loan, right? Well, which part of the Reisha? You can't mean literally the Reisha. I mean, the Reisha nobody swears. In the Reisha, it was a kofar bakol. Oh, come on, you know what I mean. I'm talking about the second case in the Reisha. We're calling the Reisha the cases in the Mishnah in which the burden of the shvua is going to be on the borrower who claims that something is worth more and that he should be chayiv less, right? So the second, of course, the first case, he denied it all and there was no shvua. I'm not talking about that case. The second case of that set was where the guy says, I lent you a sella and it was worth only one shekel. So you still owe me the other shekel. And this guy says, no, you lent me a sella, but it was worth a shekel and a half. It was worth shlosha dinarin. I only owe you a dinar. I don't owe you a shekel. So in that case, the loveh is supposed to be nishba, right? Shvuah gabilodei. That is the shvuah diraisa. That's the shvuah on moda b'miksas. In this case, the way to understand, now this is not the way that we came out, and it's not the conclusion in the end. In this case, the Rabbanan said, you know what? In order to avoid the problem, let the person who might take out that pikadon and show the other guy up, let him make the shvuah. And when he makes the shvuah, he can take the entire thing. He's ready to swear that the guy owes him a shekel. Fine. Let him make a shvuah that the guy owes him a shekel, and the guy will have to pay him a shekel. But we can't let the shekel, we can't let the shvuah, rather, be in the hands of the borrower, because if he swears that it's only a dinner, then this person may take out the watch. That's how to understand it. But that's not really the correct way to understand it. Because now that Rav Ashi has pointed out that there is a general halach, the kaimalan, zeh nishba she'eino b'reshuto. He was talking about this case where the person has to swear, I don't have that watch. And then the lova has to swear how much it was worth. That's this case, case number two, the seifa of the reisha. So now it's easy to understand what the Mishnah is saying. Who swears first? That's what the question is. Mi nishba techila, the one to swear first, is Misha Pikadon Etzlo. It's the guy that was last in possession, which of course is the Malveh. Because if the Lova swears first that it was worth the shekel and a half, then the Malveh may take out the watch, Yotzi Alata Pikadon, and he'll show you, see, this guy was lying, was not worth any shekel and a half. And therefore, first, let him take a shvuah. I don't have that watch in my possession. And then, of course, he's not going to be able to take the watch out and show that he's willing to make a shvuah sheker. Amar Shmuel, let's also talk about the interrelationship of the value of a mashkan for the loan. Because, I mean, yes, it's possible that the mashkan is there to facilitate collection, but it's also possible that the mashkan is there for more than facilitation. It's basically meant to be the resort that I have to actually being paid. It's not just to facilitate being paid. So that whatever the mashkan is, that's not the point. I'll take the mashkan. So therefore, says Shmuel, look, if a guy lends even $1,000 to somebody, right? And he says, look, I'm only going to lend this to you on the basis of collateral. So the guy says, well, I've got a $5 Timex watch. That's about all I own. Okay, says the guy, I'll take your $5 Timex watch. Or the guy gives him a handle of a broom or a handle of a magal, a sickle, which is worth very little. But if he loses that $5 Timex watch, he can kiss his $1,000 goodbye. Because that's what he laid the loan on that collateral. If he loses that collateral, so then he doesn't have a right to collect at all. That was his collection. However, in the event that he gave him, he says, well, I have two Timex watches. You know, one of them I keep for Shabbos. One is worth $10. One is worth $5. You know, that's all I have. And I need $1,000. So he takes the two of them.
Wouldn't trust
a two-timer. Not bad. So if he says, I'm taking two Timex watches, and then one Timex watch was lost, then he doesn't lose half of his $1,000. It's not like it was, okay, I'm going to give you 500 for one Timex and 500 for the other Timex. That doesn't make sense. So in that case, we don't say that it was prorated, the loan, in any way. He didn't say anything about that. So since there's like one collateral is two Timex watches. If the collateral is still there and it's not totally gone, so then basically I'll pay you the $5 for your missing watch and I want my $1,000. Whereas Rav Nachman says, no, not true. Even if it was a joint collateral of two Timex watches, you lose one of them, then you lost half your loan. You lose the other one, you lost the entire loan. I do agree that in the event that there was something that was an actual valuable thing that is normally meant as payment. Now, that's different. So let's say a guy takes a $5 Timex watch together with the one precious thing that this guy has. He's got a Kruger Rand. Right? Okay, so he says, look, you know, somebody once gave me a Kruger Rand for my bar mitzvah. I'll give you my Kruger Rand and my Timex watch. Unfortunately, my fountain pen for my bar mitzvah, I lost. Okay. So in this case, if you give him something that is a valuable thing that people actually use for payment, so then we don't look at it that way. In that case, we say, okay, look, certainly this is something that people will actually accept as payment. He wants that Kruger Rand to be able to collect it. And if that's the case, it's not a facilitator. The Timex watch is a facilitator. And in that case, if he says, I'm only going to lend if I facilitate collection, and he gave up on that collection and you lost it. But here he means to actually take a Kruger Rand for whatever it's worth. Whereas the Nardois say, not true. We take it another step further. Even if it was a cut of an Oscar, it could be a Timex watch and together with a Kruger Rand. If you lose the Nazca, then you lost half of the value. You lost the Timex, you lost the other half of a value. It wasn't meant as the amount of what it's worth. It's not. So now the question is, are any of these approaches correct? I mean, it all started with Shmuel, right? It was Shmuel's idea that we don't talk about necessarily the value of collateral. We talk about the fact of collateral. I don't think any of that is right, says the Gemara. Because let's take a look in our Mishnah. Selah Hilvi Tichalav. The whole discussion is about the precise value of his Timex watch. So I understand, according to Shmuel, what are we discussing value? It's simply a fact that, hey, you made me a loan based on my watch. You lost my watch. Bye-bye loan. The whole Mishnah is predicated on looking at Shmuel as being ridiculous. We're discussing whether the selah v'ticha, was it worth a shekel? And the other guy saying, no, it was actually shlosha dinarim, and it is ischayev. I mean, if Shmuel's right, or any of these approaches are right, so then he should say, excuse me, you took my watch, and you lost my watch, you can kiss your loan goodbye, right? No, this is, obviously, what do you think? Shmuel's an idiot. The Mishnah is talking about a case where he took a collateral as payment collateral. He said so beferish. You don't pay me, I'm going to deduct this amount immediately, and you're going to owe me the rest. So he said that that's the point of his taking the mashkan. Shmuel's case is where it was the way we had it before. Well, I don't want to lend you money. If you don't give me collateral, I'll give you collateral. All right, I'll take your Timex watch. That's something else that over there he's saying, that it's just to remember that you owe me the money and that I can use this to collect. And he's not talking about that it'll deduct it from the loan. So there he takes it in place of the loan. That's the way Shmuel understood. Is it shayach that this idea of Shmuel and all of these other Tanayim, Amorayim, is it that it's actually a machlokas tanoim? Because in the Braita it says, Amalve et chaviro al hamashkon, viavad hamashkon, ishavavi tolit ma'otav. So if he loses the mashkon, then he has to swear, and he then can still collect his money. So says Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva says, no. But Love can say, look, you only agree to lend me this money based on the mashkan that I'm giving you. If the mashkan is lost, your money is lost. That seems to be exactly the machlokas over here between Shmuel. I mean, this is what Shmuel was saying between what we thought. If he wrote it in a shtar, which means that there's no issue of taking the mashkan just as a zichron dvarim. We have the whole thing as a legal shtar in Beis Din, and plus I gave you a mashkan. But what'd you give me a mashkan for? You've got a shtar over there, avad hamashkan. In that case, avad motav. Now, none of this makes particularly good sense, but the Gemara is going to be going into it on our Shabbos daf. So, let's take a look on Shabbos about what the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva is. Now, this is a short daf, and if we start it, we finished it. So I would suggest that we start from here. Efi Dami, on Mitzvah Shabbos, and hopefully we'll be able to be learning on Mitzvah Shabbos. We can all meet if you want. I'll meet you by the entrance, the lower entrance, to by near Shar Niknor, facing Shar Niknor, but outside of the Azor, if you don't mind, so we don't have to worry about, you know, any too much mace issues and so on. So I'll meet you out there. And if not, then hopefully we'll still have Zoom available. So, what time?
It's a sworn conclusion.
I didn't hear. So let us determine when Shabbos is out according to ED.
8:28.
You're still pulling this shtick on us? 8:28?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So you're...
A couple of weeks.
Oh, man. That's late. Okay. Are our dear, supposedly safe friends in Johannesburg, who have all escaped, apparently, to the local air raid shelters, except for Akiva. What would you say, Akiva? 9:30 still good? Okay, we got a thumbs up from Akiva, and we got some lion skins from Hari and Naftali. That should be good enough. It's good enough for me. And we've got our very own lion right there, Sir Richard, and he's okay with that. 9:30 good. Very good then. Just make sure that the internet stays up, will you, Rich? I'm relying on you and your connections for that. Connections. Take care, everybody.
Gina's by 9:30 p.m.
Kol tov, everyone. Shabbat shalom and v'rach. I hope we'll even be able to get together in the afternoon.
Bezrat Hashem.
Bezrat Hashem.